Bev Dirksen, and I'm talking to Mr. Fred Nichols here, who's going to talk about his early neighborhood in Westboro.
Well, we were all born and brought up at it's now the Norman White Homestead at the corner of Arch and Fisher Street. When we were brought up, there was only 15 houses on Fisher Street, and today there are 79. Arch Street was just an old road you could hardly drive through. And today, I think there's 35 houses on Arch Street, not counting Hyder Road and Linda Road and the development that's up there. We used to walk about a half to three quarters of a mile to get a badge or with horse-drawn vehicles to take us to school. We used to leave home at 7 and walk down to my grandmother's to get the badge. And we had to be to school at 8:45, so we left at 7. And we had just old blankets to cover up with. Talk about today. The kids should have been living then and seen what it was like. We didn't freeze to death getting there. It was something terrible. No matter what the weather was, we went. But there was times in the winter that the road wasn't open for 2 or 3 days. And the way they used to open the roads then, a bunch of men would get on a horse-drawn sled, put some hand plows on the side of it, and drive until it come to drifts so big the horses couldn't go through them, and the men would get out and shovel to let the horses ride. As long as the road was open enough for horses to get to town, the road was supposed to be all broke out.
It was clear.
It was clear. It was all clear. And now if they can't see the black macadam in the road, they complain about the road.
Right.
If you had a fire at that time, you might as well just watch it burn. I remember my grandfather's barn burned. They didn't save anything but the house. Everything went down, cows and all. Never could get there. It was too far away because all they had at that time was a horse-drawn steamer. Had to drive a pair of horses pulling a steamer to get there for water. And of course, we had no water, no town water up that way. In fact, we didn't have electric lights, no telephone. The telephone and lights used to stop right up where Bob Matthews lives right now, just up Fisher Street.
Yes.
That was the end of the street lights.
It's only a little way up, too.
That's just up, we were right down there at Bob Matthews, 8 Fisher Street. That was the last street light on Fisher Street. Now, I want to tell you, they should have been back in those days, but I was better off then than we are now, as far as I'm concerned. Now, it was a terrible, terrible condition in some ways, but we'd put everything in for the winter, buy flour by the barrel, buy your coal. All we had was stoves for heat, because we had no electricity, no radio, no telephone, no high fives, no scanners.
Cold getting up in the morning, I
Well,
imagine.
We don't, and no bathroom because there was no running water. Take a wash tub and stand around the stove to take a bath in the wintertime. That was the way we were all brought up, but we all survived, and I'm glad we did the way we did.
And healthy.
Right? Yes, and healthy is right. I can remember the doctor, even, when he used to come to our house, used to come with a horse and buggy. I can remember the first car I saw of Dr. Knight's. It was just a little coupe, and he had curtains in it, and I thought that was the fanciest thing I ever saw. Nobody knew what automobiles were to speak of then. Back then, it was 70 years ago, and I want to tell you, things have changed a lot in 70 years.
And you had mentioned that all the streets were just dirt roads.
All the streets were just plain dirt roads, and there were stones in the spring when the frost would heave. They'd come out of the ground, why, half as big as a barrel. If you didn't hang on to the seat, you'd get thrown out of the wagon getting there. It was terrible, no fooling the roads the way they were.
Do you remember what time you got home from school in the afternoon?
Oh, half past 4, 5 o'clock. School used to get out at 3:15. It started at 9 o'clock. We had no gyms then. We got our exercise at home. Now they have to have gyms and everything, and they complain. All the exercises we got, they'd open the windows, and we'd stretch our arms out up and down and sideways and back and forth, and give us a little exercise, and that's what we had. I went to school at the Harvey School and the Eli Whitney School, both. And now they have to have 20 acres to build a school on. They spent more time out playing in the yards than they do in school, as far as I'm concerned. I may be old-fashioned, but I hope I stay that way.
Well, good for you. Do you remember any of your neighbors?
Well, our nearest neighbor was down about halfway to where we took the bus. The family's name was Luco. two of them live there today. One of the boys, Thomas Luco, lives there, and his sister, Lily. There was just two of them. I think there was 11 children in that family. And their father made all their money to support that family on strawberries and asparagus.
I think that's fascinating.
And I know, I can remember well, my father and going to Worcester with this Mr. Luco, he'd hitch up his horse and my father'd hitch up his with an express wagon, and they'd take their vegetables to Worcester up at what we used to call Salem Square, where the buses used to come in. And they'd leave at 2:30 in the morning, and they'd go together so they'd be company for each other, rather than riding the road. And they'd leave at 2:30 to get up there for 6 o'clock, take up the potatoes and sweet corn. And I've seen my father bring sweet corn back home that he couldn't get 10 cents a dozen for it to sell it. He said it was worth that to feed to the cows. Now, imagine driving to Worcester with a wagon, have to get up on the old, what is now the Route 9, was get out onto that by the turnpike, come out up there where Simino's is, you know, mm-hmm. They come up that back road, yeah. And get on up there and then go into Worcester. And that was, and then every week, even in the, all year round, he'd take all our eggs to Worcester. And he'd bring home the vegetables from Worcester. He used to go to the Worcester Market just under the bridge by the depot. It used to be the depot. Mm-hmm. Bring home all our vegetables from up there. And I tell you, it was a good life.
Yeah.
It was a good life. People would be better off today if some of them lived the same kind of a life.
Oh, you're right. How many were in your family?
There was 5 of us. I had 2 brothers and 2 sisters. My father died when I was 11. My father and grandfather lived down below where I used to take the bus. Died 6 weeks apart in the fall of November, the Bannberg, in the same year. So after my father died, of course, my mother had to sell the farm because I was only 11. My brother Arthur was about 5 years older than I was. We couldn't take care of all the cows, and my mother'd go to Worcester to get a hired man. They used to have employment agencies where you could hire them. I remember one day she brought home a man, and the minute we brought the cows in the barn, we knew he didn't know anything about cows, didn't even know how to tie them up. He'd set behind the cow, he was going to set behind the cow instead of on the side of the cow to milk it.
Obviously not going to be much of a help, right?
No.
Not in running the farm. You said she had to sell the farm then and you moved
down. We sold the farm then to a family with Marshalls. They lived there until Norman White bought it.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be the old Brigham farm. And right across from the big house where Norman lives now, White lives, there was a small house over there, a cottage house that went with it. And it's been torn down, now probably 15 years or so. But I remember it was one of the 12 oldest houses in Westboro, because they used to put out a calendar with the 12 oldest houses in Westboro on it. And the plaster house down on East Main Street where Gilbert Temple lived was one of them. Every month had a different picture of the house on it. It was a nice little old house, so we used to use it for a workshop, see. So that's all we used it for, to go up there, for the workshop, you know. And as I said, we stayed there until after my father died. And of course, my poor mother couldn't run it alone because my oldest brother had got married and he'd gone, and it only left my brother Arthur and myself to run it. So. But when they wanted to go to a dance, my older brothers and sisters, I was too young, they'd have to drive down with the horse and wagon and put it down in the stable until the dance was over and then drive it back home again. No automobiles anytime.
Where did you move to?
When we moved to Westboro.
Into
Westboro,
town?
Up where my brother Arthur lives, did live until he died, at 5 Fisher Street.
Oh.
That little car. Well, when we first moved, we had to find a place to live. So we lived on West Street 2 months until we found that cottage house there. And my mother bought that. It belonged to the Fisher Estate, and that is where Bob Matthews lives now. It used to be a big apple orchard in there. And she had a lot of hens. And we bought it from them. That's where we lived until I married. In fact, my sister-in-law still lives there because my brother has died.
But it is still in the family.
Oh, yeah, it's still in the family, yeah. So.
Is good. Do you remember when they first had a road in Westboro?
Oh.
Do you have any idea what excitement it caused, or I suppose there were a few that thought it was ridiculous?
I can remember the electric cars coming from Hopkins, stopping where the jewelry store is, in Halpin's Market. That was the end of the line for Hopkins. And they'd go there, and then there was another line went to Northbrook. And then the other ones went to Worcester and to Marlborough. And when they'd go to Marlborough, when I got older, they were still running over there when I was old enough to go to Lake Chauncey to dance. There was a big dance hall down there. And dancing was the nickel of dance. They checked dance and nickel. And every time the electric car would go to Marlborough, if you go over the back road to Marlborough now, you can still see the path up through the woods where it went. It was a big hill. And Lake Chauncey was owned by the Consolidated Electric Car Company. And when they'd go up that hill, the lights would get so dim down at Lake Chauncey, they looked like candles burning because it took all the power to get the car up over the hill. Now, I can...
Oh, that's interesting. I know someone had mentioned on one of the other tapes I had done that there was a bowling alley at Lake Chauncey.
Oh, yes.
They saw their first movie at Lake Chauncey. You know, I was fascinated.
There was such a mob down there. They'd come from Milford, Hudson, and all around. And I can remember then of our chief of police, who used to be Tom Humphrey. And they only used to have about three or four cops down there. And if they got a gang fight going, Tom would walk right into it. And the gang fight was all over. But today you can't say anything to a child because their folks will come back onto you. At that time, you got a crack side of the face and maybe a kick in the rear end at the same time. And I tell you, they respected the cops. They didn't go around calling them pigs then.
Yeah.
They respected them.
Right. Well, and the kids probably got the same thing when they get home.
That's right. You didn't go home and tell what you got because you'd probably get twice as bad when you got home. And I remember in school many a time, if you threw a snowball, you got a rat's hand. If you know what a rat's hand is, like a piece of wicker, you know. And you really got it, too. I remember when I was in the sixth grade once, a teacher we had from Hopkins, and the fellow was sitting. I always seemed to get the front row. I don't know why, but I did. And there was two other boys, Cliff McGlory, and we used to call him Hickey Hayden, George Hayden. We always got the front row. And, boy, I'll never forget the teacher from Hopkins. She slapped him in the face with an open hand, enough to knock him right out of the chair. And he said to her, "What do you think you're doing? Should you want another one so you remember it?" And I guess he didn't want another one to remember. You could see the print of her hand right on his face. He didn't go home and tell his folks he got a slap in the face. And now you can't even speak to him, but they go home and tell their folks, and the teacher's in hot water. There's not enough discipline today. That's the whole trouble. And half of it is they don't know where their kids are anyhow. As long as they get out of the house, that's all they care about.
Do you remember what your family did for recreation?
Yeah, played dominoes, played cards, played checkers, and we had a phonograph that you used to wind up. You see some of them around today in auctions. They still buy some of them.
Yeah.
And if you got a crack in the record, or if you got a bad needle, you used to have to keep changing the needle. They did have a Victrola that was put out by Edson. It used to use a wooden needle, and you had a thing you'd cut the needle with that you'd put it in, so you get a sharper point on it. And it was a cylinder type record. And it was just a little piece of wood, and it had a point on it. And it come down to a taper. And if you put it in this machine and pull the handle, it cut a little bit more off of the wood, so the record would play clear.
Keep sharpening the needles.
The needles, that's right. Oh, you'd get a box of needles, probably 100 needles in a box, and you'd use it, and when it started getting bad, you'd resharpen it, and when it got so sharp you couldn't sharpen it anymore, you put a new one in it. That was our recreation then. And of course then, people didn't stay up until midnight, because you had to get up in the morning, 4:30, to go out and start do your chores.
Yeah.
Folks was in bed. Everybody was in bed at 9 o'clock at that time. A lot of them was in bed before 9 o'clock. Because they worked then, from daylight till dark.
Right.
After that, I can remember my father, we didn't have tractors or anything like that at that time. The mowing, all that had begun with horses, with a mowing machine. And it was so hot through the hot summer days, he'd wait after the sun went down, after supper, to go and mow, so it wouldn't be so warm when the horses pulling the mowing machine. We had no hay bales then. Everything was pitched onto the wagon with a pitchfork. And when you got in the barn, it had to come off the same way and stacked in the mouths.
And it was stored like that.
All handwork then.
Yeah. People took a lot of pride in their work, though.
That's right. That's right.
And pride in their farms. And
that's right. That's very true. But if we'd had like lights and things, we could have had a milking machine. Of course, they didn't have milking machines at that time. I remember I started milking when I was about 5 years old. I shouldn't probably say this today because everybody would laugh, but I've seen the time that my father would use what we call a milking tool. It looks like a nail, but there's a shoulder on it. And if a cow gets cut anywhere on the barbed wire so that he couldn't squeeze it, a milker would be so sore. He used to put that milking tool in it, and the milk would run out itself. Well, I'd seen him do that time and time again. And Dr. Reed was on school committee for years, and he told every teacher I went to what I did. And I wasn't even going to school then. So I sat down. My father taught us to milk. We was 5. He didn't care. He'd give us some cow that he was drying up. He didn't care how long we sat there and yanked on it to get the milk out. So I sat down to milk this night, and I thought, boy, I think I'll get them other two milking while I'm milking the other two, so they have 4 to milk. So what did I do? I thought he used a nail. And instead of using an ordinary nail, I used a shingle nail, which is square. And I tried to put it up there to get the milk to come out. And she kicked me, and I landed over back. And he came down, and he wondered why she kicked me. And he said, what happened? Well, I said, that darn fool, she wouldn't stand still. Well, I got that nail up in her tip. Doc Reed used to tell every teacher every year about me sticking that nail in the cow's tit to get it to milk. My sister used to milk. I had a sister that could milk faster than any man you ever saw. She was a wonderful milker. All we had in the barn, we'd hang up 3 lanterns, one on each end, one in the middle, to see the milk. And we had a great big tub in the milk room, and the hired man used to pump that all the while we was milking cows to get that tub full of water. And then it would flow from that tub to the cows, the same idea as the toilet bills, float, you know, see. So the cows had running water that way, but we had to pump it all with a pitcher pump by hand. And you'd hang the milk down the well in a can to keep it cool.
You'd hang it down the well until it was time to take it.
Well, know. Then we did have a big ice box that we put in, but our own milk, we always hung it down the well on a rope in a milk can. Cream, we always had 1 can of cream. Anytime my mother wanted a quart of cream, she just went up, took that can, and poured it out. We always had our own cream and things. Made our own butter.
With a churn.
Yeah. We had a milk separator that you sat down. We used to sit down on some of you stand up, and you pour the milk on the top. And the faster you turn the lever, the heavier the cream is. If you turn it slow, it almost just runs through straight milk. But if you turn it real fast, the cream would come out, almost so thick you'd think it was half whipped when it came out, see. You can make, that's how they make light cream and heavy cream today when you buy it, see. It's run through the milk separator. We call them a milk separator to separate the cream from the milk. And the faster it is churned, the thicker the cream is. And if you run it slow, you get light cream. Run it fast, you get heavy cream.
So that's, I can remember, you know, my mother always pouring the top
off of the bottle.
Off of the bottle and having that, you know, as cream with coffee and so forth. But that's interesting. Now, as far as the milk, did you ever pasteurize it or sterilize
never.
Anything?
I can remember going to town meeting one night and one of the assessors was there. His name was Mr. Treadway. He lived down on Ruggles Street, and they were trying to vote on having pasteurized milk. And I think he weighed about 250. He was a sharp man, awfully fat. And I remember him standing up, and he said, when I was a boy growing up, and I was just a young fellow then, just starting to vote, and he said, when I was a young fellow growing up, I was just brought up on good old straight cow's milk. He said, what do you think I'd have looked like if I'd been brought up on pasteurized milk? You think I'd been any bigger? Everybody just roared at that man telling about that, see, because he was right, though, in a way. It's all right. Maybe it is good to have pasteurized milk. I mean, I use it myself today and that, but never heard of such a thing. Never heard of such a thing.
Well, I know, people just, you know, I know my mother talked about going down and getting pails of milk.
Oh, sure.
And bringing them up, you know.
My father did a lot of butchering.
When she was young.
And the only thing he said he didn't like to butcher was a sheep. Because he said they always sounded to him like a baby crying. But pigs, he killed many of pigs, and steers, and things like that. He killed for all the neighbors around, every place.
All of the people in your neighborhood then, when you were out there, they all had farms?
Oh, everybody had farms.
Everyone was a farm.
There was just one other woman that lived over on Gleason Street, and their name was Haven. And she used to take in washes and washed them all on the scrub board. And he'd pick them up on the weekend for her and then deliver them. And they had just one daughter, and that woman used to wash and iron all week long. And he'd pick up all those washings around. Even after we came to Westboro, down to the Fisher Street to live, he stopped our house every Sunday morning and pick up our washing and take it home for her to wash.
And is that how that family earned the bulk
of
their
money? Oh, no, that was just her own money.
He
had cows and a garden and everything like that. See, through the winter, when you couldn't have a garden, they'd cut wood down in the woodlot and then sell wood for people that wanted. We used to have a man come up from down where the Red Barn is right now. His name was Harrington, and had a saw rig. And he'd come up and probably spend 2 days with that saw rig cutting wood. Somebody would pass it to him, and he'd saw it, and somebody would take it away. And they'd probably saw 50 cord, see. And we used to sell wood. I can remember Dr. Knight, who I was named after. My middle name is Knight, see. I was supposed to have been Charles Knight Nichols, but then my grandfather, who lived down below, thought they should name me after a very good friend of my father's in Worcester. He was on the police force, and his name was Alfred. So I was supposed to have been Alfred Nichols. In fact, I was married as Alfred. And I went in to get my birth certificate one day, and Annie Dunn wrote it out, Fred. And I said, this isn't right, Annie, it's Alfred. And I'm awful sorry it's recorded as Fred. So I tell my wife today, we're not legally married. I had to change my driving license and everything to Fred. I had to change my name on the voting list and everything because I was Alfred to start with.
How many years did you go thinking you were Alfred before you found out?
Well, I was married at 22, and I was probably 4 or 5 years afterwards. How come? I'll tell you, I got stopped over in Marlboro going to a fireman's muster one day, and one of them said, either the driving license said, my driving license said Fred, because I didn't like Alfred. And my registration for my first car, my mother bought me my first car, and she registered for me, and she registered as Alfred. Mm-hmm. So when the inspector stopped me, he said, how come your license don't compare? So I told him, and he said, well, you better get them changed. See? So that's when I got my change back to Fred. I was married as Alfred. Therefore, I'm not legally married, I suppose, according to the law.
There
but
is no
Alfred,
we
did 50
right?
years of it, so.
Did you want to mention anything about your work? Did you work in Westboro?
What do you mean, after I was grown up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I worked quite a few years in the tape shop. It's torn down now. That's where I met my wife, in the tape shop, down there, Mason's Tape Shop. I worked in that. And I worked in Telecron.
What did they make in the tape shop?
Tape. We used to call it narrow fabric. They made everything from an eighth of an inch up to about 2 inches. They used to use it a lot. Now they don't use it so much. They used to use it, I can remember, Royal Worcester Corset Company. Worcester used to buy a lot of tape for corsets. And, oh, they used it for all kind of binding and everything. It was a big crowd, and it was a good place to work. They were wonderful, wonderful people to work. Then I worked in Telecron, and I left Telecron during the Second War, right after after they bombed Tokyo, see. And I came back, and then I was superintendent of water in Westboro for 10 years. And of course, then the pay wasn't like it is now. No matter how many hours a week we work, the superintendent, you just got a week's pay. You could work 2 weeks in one, and you got a week's pay. So I got fed up with it. We had a finance committee that we had to go before to tell them what we wanted for the year. And they'd want to know how many feet of pipe we were going to want. How did we know how many houses was going to be built in town the following year? Or anything like that. So I went to work then for R.H. White Construction in Auburn as foreman for them, their waterworks company. He came after me 3 times and I kept making him come back. And he kept saying, well, finally, he said, how much money are you going to have to get you to go to work? And I told him. And I want to tell you, I made more money in 1 week than I did in 3 working for the town.
Isn't that something?
Isn't that something? Then I was getting older. There was a lot of traveling to it. We worked in New Hampshire, worked in, down in Connecticut. And when we'd go to Connecticut, we'd stay for the week. We'd down Monday morning, home Saturday. But that Saturday was good. It was all time and a half. Everything over 8 hours was time and a half. And we'd work while we were out of town. We'd work until pretty near dark. So we'd have about 40 hours in by Thursday. We'd work 10 hours a day. And then all Friday and Saturday, he'd pay our board and room while we were gone. See? But it was gone from the family all the time. And I was getting older. Roland Kimball wanted me to go to work for him down here. So I was right in town, right on top of my house. Almost. He even gave me a car to ride from Village Lumber up the corner. I could see the place there. Drive that car home and put it in the yard and drive it back in the morning. See? Yeah. And that was our service wagon. So I worked for him until I retired. And then they didn't want me to retire. And I said, I don't intend to work until I die. I worked there until I was 68. And I said, that's enough.
Boy, that's wonderful. And now that you are retired, you were
I'm retired.
Busy
semi-retired.
Get
that's
out,
right. I helped my wife last night, and that's what I was doing right up until the time I called you. And I got to go back tonight and help her again. Froze 17 quarts of applesauce last night. Part of the apples. We leave the skins on so we have better color in the applesauce that isn't white, see. So I went and picked up about 10 bushels of apples for my daughter and myself. Now, last year I had a wonderful big garden. I had about 55 bushels of potatoes. But this year, on account of her being sick, I didn't even home once because I couldn't leave her. I had to stay right with her after I got them planted, then I couldn't take care of her. See? So now with the price of potatoes, I see Julio had them last week. 49 cents for 10 pounds. You can't raise them.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't raise them for that. Between the work you put in, the spray that it takes, everybody wonders why stuff has gone up. Nothing makes stuff go up, it's just the people that do, because every time a contract runs out, the union's got to get about $3 an hour raise for them.
Do you have any idea what you first, I know you had mentioned that you sold quart of milk for 7 cents.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how much money you made on your first job?
Yes.
I think that
I went to work for $8.44 a week in the tape shop.
Yeah.
$8, and I can remember it well. $8.44 a week.
And felt like a millionaire when you got your first
job. And when I was 20 years old, I had an attack appendix and it burst. And I went to, they took me to Memorial Hospital, and you couldn't drive, there was no turnpike then. I got a taxi, which used to be Brown Stable, to take me to the hospital. And Dr. Knight rode with me, and we went to Northborough Center, and had to go that way and into Shrewsbury to go to the hospital. And going over the Northborough Road, the pain all left me. I thought we was going over railroad ties. The road was so rough. It was the 31st day of March. I'll never forget it, because the next day was April Fool's Day. And everybody was April Fooling everybody up there, and I so near death. I weighed 90 pounds the last time they operated. Surgery 5 times in 4 weeks. And Chief Higgins' wife was my nurse up here. And she was a wonderful, wonderful nurse. Oh, she was wonderful. But I went to surgery 5 times, and then they gave me a blood transfusion, and there was 9 from Mason's shop came up to give me the transfusion. But they had to check everybody. They do it different now. They have a blood bank. But then they used to give it right direct. So they had to check all 9 to get the same type of blood as I had. And my brother-in-law gave me a quart of blood direct. I laid on one table and he laid on the other. And they'd take it right from him into a bottle and come back and put a rubber bulb on top of it and square it back into my arm. And I was there 9 weeks, and what I was talking about prices, it cost me $3 a day for my room, $21 a week. And I was there 9 weeks. My wife just come out of the hospital on 5th of July and it was $100 a day. Now, are you any better off with the money you make today? My first car was a Buick in 25 and I paid $1,300 for it. and I bought a Chrysler in 28 and paid $1,300, well, just a few dollars over. It wasn't $1,400, $1,300 for that. My wife bought a new Ford in 25. That was the year I started going. And she bought a new Ford down here where there used to be Knott's Ford down here, a Wheatley's down at the corner. She paid $525 for a Ford Coupe.
Brand new.
Brand new. And we'd get 6 gallons of gas for a dollar. And that was high. Sometimes you get 7. 6 gallons of gas for a dollar. Of course, they didn't have permanent antifreeze at that time. You put alcohol in your radiator or drain it every night and then fill it in the morning. That's right. And of course, you jack up one back wheel so you could crank it. It would turn over easier if you had a wheel jacked up. And you jack up a wheel or leave it on a hill so you could push it down the hill the next morning. The next morning. That's a fact. Now, that's the way we live.
Yeah.
But it was a good life. I remember the year before we were married, my wife was from Hopkinton, or Woodville, and she was stuck here for 3 weeks. She lived at our house and slept with my mother, and we left her car up where Harry Woodman lives now on Milk Street in that barn because she couldn't get home. And the first weekend, I hired a horse and a wood sled to go to get her home to get some clothes. And I went down by, and where Bullard shop is now, and where one of the Bullards lives this side of the shop, then the red house. Which one died? Is it Don or, well, the one that lives there now, right? Just the other side of the Catholic cemetery. I had to go out through the field back of his house and down around back of Bullard shop, because I can remember they were trying to open the road along by Bullard shop at that time. It was so blocked you couldn't drive through. No cars and nothing running. And I drove her with a wood sled to get her to Woodville to get some more clothes. Down through the fields. You went wherever there wasn't drifts. You went around them. Great big old wood sled. I can remember it just as well as now.
And made it there and back.
Made it there and back. And I remember in 25, my mother and my sister and her husband went to Kennebunk, Maine for a week's vacation. And we went up with them. Brother and his wife, and we took 2 cars so we'd get all the luggage because there was no trunks on cars then. And we got them up there and left them, and the following Saturday, my wife and I went up with the Ford Coupe to bring them back. And we left Westboro when the shop closed at 10:30 in the morning. She put up a lunch, and we stopped to get gas, and when she did, we bought some tonic. She had sandwiches made. I didn't stop to eat, only driving along the road because we was afraid we wouldn't get there by dark to Kennebunk, Maine. Take you 5 and 6 hours to get up there.
Yeah.
And today I drive to Brunswick to see my son, and that's a long ways from Kennebunk, and I go up in 3 hours. And it used to take us 6 hours to get up to Kennebunk. That's just the difference in what today.
In the road.
As I say, your cars, you put in alcohol, you can get alcohol and put in your radiators. But at the minute it got a warm day, it would all boil away.
Yeah.
So you'd add some more alcohol. You were froze up more than you were thawed out.
Yeah.
That's a fact with your cars. You never knew what they were going to do. I've seen people try to put kerosene in them. Well, that rots the hoses out, so you can't use kerosene. And then we didn't have any electric windshield wipers. You just had a hand wiper, you know, and you'd keep your hand going up there to keep the windshield wiper going, to keep the windshield clean.
That's
right.
Wiper.
That's right. Now, what do you think of that? And talk about defrosters. Didn't know what defrosters was all like that. I was up deer hunting one night, and I was coming home, and up in Westminster, Johnny Bose was with me. We stopped at the farmhouse, and I went to the door, and I asked the woman if she had any candles I could buy. She said, "Well, what do you want candles for?" So we got some candles, and we lit them, and tipped them up so the wax would run down on the dash of the car. We stood them up on the windshield so we could get some heat to see to drive home because it was so cold, it was so frosted that we couldn't see through the windshield.
So your candles were your defroster.
And no heaters in cars because my wife's folks lived in Phillipston. And I'd go up there and I can remember heating stones, soap stones, and take a jug, a big jug, and fill it with hot water, put it between your legs and cover over with a blanket. and keep the soapstone in your hand, so when one hand got cold, you'd put it on and dry it with the other hand.
See how pampered we are now.
I'm telling you.
Heaters and the windshield wipers and defrosters,
right,
and even air conditioners now.
That's
in some
right.
cars.
That's right. That's what I'm telling you. Folks don't know how the other half of the world used to live, but it was a good life, let me tell you.
And it was a happy life.
It was a
happy life. I can
your
tell from the way you described
your families was a lot happier then than they are today. Your families was a lot happier years ago than they are today.
And a lot closer, I think.
That's right.
A lot closer.
Well,
it's really been interesting. And this concludes my interview with Mr. Nichols. I thank you very much for coming.
Well, we thank you. What I've said is the truth. I can say that anyhow.
Good.